The Columbia Network welcomes you to the Columbia Workshop. Tonight, the workshop spokesman is Mr. Virgil Thompson.
The reason I have been asked to announce this show is that I wrote some music for it. I write a great deal of music of one kind or another. Also, I work as music critic for the New York Herald Tribune. The authors of tonight's workshop production are E. and E. Spitzer. Mrs. Spitzer is a poet whose verses have been published rather widely. Mr. Spitzer is in the advertising business. This is their first appearance on the workshop, although it is not mine. The name of their script is Soundtrack of the Life of a Careful Man. Mr. Earl McGill is directing it, and Alexander Semler is conducting the orchestra. The narrator is Arnold Moss. We hope you will like the entertainment and tell us so. If you don't, please tell us so, too.
Herman Q. Pennywhistle's favorite word was...
I believe in safety first. Safety second. Safety third.
He devoted all his time to this admirable creed and lived in an apartment, fireproof indeed, with his safety-trained wife, named Clementine, and the twins, Herman Jr. and Hermine. They had a double lock on the outside door, and Herman carried an extra key just to make sure. There were screens on all the windows to keep out bugs. A non-skid rubber backing underneath all the rugs. Weather stripping for the January air. An electric fan for June when there wasn't any air. Their oil furnace had an automatic gauge. Their well-behaved canaries stayed always in the cage. Cross ventilation, plenty of air, extermination. A frigid air. Electric outlets were cautiously placed, and Herman's shoelaces never came unlaced. They put all their savings in a nice big bank. It was round and fat as an oil tank. They spent so much, and they saved so much. And Herman never borrowed or went in for the touch. All in accord with Herman's word of...
safety first. Safety second. Safety third.
And every morning when the birds began to beep, Herman didn't roll over and go back to sleep. Oh, no. The minute the alarm clock rang, Herman was up with a bang. Wool socks, comfort shoes. Lesser men might lose a garter, but Herman never. And his non-roll collar button stayed inside forever. Toothpaste tube put firmly on the foaming second he was done. Hot water. Then warm. Floating soap, no grope. At last he'd turn it iceberg cold. Ah. to keep him fit when he grew old. His safety razor never nicked. The electric toaster always ticked. Till every slice was golden brown. And when the last caffeineless sip gulped down, and the last crunching bite was off his plate, it was always exactly 8:30. Then Herman would have just one cigarette, a non-nicotine one, you can bet. And he'd light it first with a safety match, then out the door with a double latch, where the well-trained Clementine had reckoned everything out so carefully that she could kiss his cheek and hand him his hat all in the same split second. At the corner, he'd buy his usual paper.
Morning, Mr. Pennywhistle. See what the Dodgers did to the Giants yesterday? Boy, oh boy!
And fold it in half for the subway later. The change he always had precisely. His nickel, he always dropped so nicely into the box and pushed the lever. No one could say Herman had spring fever. And when the Norman Bell Geddes caterpillar came roaring in with a shriek and a holler... Herman didn't shove and Herman didn't push, but he got himself propelled in the middle of the rush and stood in the middle of the middlemost car. Statistics prove it's the safest from jar. And when the subway stopped and Herman got out, he walked quite fast on his well-known route. 3 blocks to the right and 1 ahead. Never once was the green light red. For what Herman had long ago figured was, if he walked so fast... he never had to pause, but a little more. Or just a little less. Would land him square in a traffic mess. So, Herman always took... just so many steps to the block and reached his working place at the dot of 9 o'clock. There's safety in numbers, as our hero might declare, so long ago he began to prepare to be an accountant, to total and subtract, to live in a world of solid, solid facts. And Herman had his bit of glamour and of fame. The elevator runners all knew his name.
Hiya, Mr. Pennywhistle.
Hello,
great weather, isn't it, huh?
For Herman had been there as long as anyone remembered. Practically as long as the firm had been assembled. And though nothing is positive after all, still, Herman's job was least at the call of pink slips and want ads, of bounce and of gate. He was never sick a day, and he was never, ever late. His time clock got punched and efficiently peeled. And he never went to funerals at the baseball field. Up in the elevator. ...901. Through the office hallway, brisk as a gun. Hat and coat hung behind the door and down to letter opening. By 904. The 12A floor was Herman's home till 6. 13? Might bring witches and broomsticks. 12 floors on top. And lesser 12 below. And Herman is the middleman.
I believe in safety first.
You know. For even Herman's firm wasn't firm the whole year round. Still, trouble either started at the top... or on the ground.
Executive offices.
Say, TJ, I'm afraid these last month's figures show. We'll have to keep the old budget down for a while anyway.
Okay, okay, let all the new men go.
And that didn't mean Herman, of course, or...
Hello, TJ, basement manager calling. We're rushed down here, more orders coming in all day long. Some of these old-timers don't seem to be quick enough. Can't turn out the work.
Well, well, have to let all the old ones go.
And that didn't mean Herman. Oh, no, indeed, for Herman was accurate, but Herman had speed. Just like his razor that never would nick, or the pop-up toaster with the automatic click. His desk was neat and all in order. Left drawer for long envelopes, and right drawer for the shorter. Outgoing. Incoming. Plainly marked. And stamps in the stamp box positively parked. The stenographers might gossip at their high, shrill keys. The errand boys might whistle in the shipping clerk's tease.
And like I was telling you, Guffy, I saw the sweetest dress at Gorham's yesterday. Gee, with sweet breath and all around
him. Kim, I'll never speak to him again, let alone go out with him.
The King of Siam. Let's ship this one to the King of Siam, Joey.
But Herman sat and soberly would total and subtract. In his orderly world of solid, solid fact. By 10 of 12, the typists would be thinking about quitting.
Come on, Jen, I could use a double chocolate malted.
And the rest of the office would be tired of morning sitting. The clicking keys would fall and the shipping clerks would stall.
Hey, Joey, you feel like some spaghetti?
Hey, I sure do.
But not Herman. No, Herman went on working till the whistle blasted noon. Then down elevator. And out across the street for his usual something of something to eat. His noonday diet scarcely ever changed. Oh, the salads might vary, and the liquids ranged from buttermilk to lemonade, depending on the weather. But the calories always came out 600 to the letter. He'd still be slightly hungry when he rose and paid his bill, but science proves it's healthier not to eat your fill. So he'd walk around the block. Before 1 o'clock, he'd return to the land of total and subtract. While the rest would come puffing and panting their way back.
Oh, gee, Guffy, you shouldn't have let me eat that triple tuna sandwich and the double Morgan.
Oh, boy, I bet we packed away 3 tons of that spaghetti.
And at 3, that all traipsed to the water cooler.
Come on, Jen, I'm thirsty. Let's get a drink, and because I need...
But Herman kept on working with adding machines and ruler. He'd help them out with dyspeptic pills, which were only handy for other people's ills. Still, a precaution if the worst came to the worst. And after all...
Safety first.
Is...
Safety first.
At 6, Herman's zeal was still undiminished. While the others left...
Good night, oh boy, Michael. Good night, Jim.
He stayed and finished the final total, or alas, subtract. And he'd close up. And shut the door securely tight. Down the hall to the night elevator, now uncrowded, and the subway later. Then his steady tread down the well-worn blocks to the waiting house with the double locks. There, Herman Jr. And Hermine.
Tidied,
and super clean. Wait in their sanitary nursery for a greeting from Daddy. Brief and cursory. He must wash before he sees them. And even then, can't hug or squeeze them. Just a long-distance pat and a vicarious kiss. The baby authorities all advise this. A Hermine.
Hi, Daddy.
And Herman Jr. are perfect examples to the punier of a cod liver and spinach education, a talcum and orange juice full ration. Their rattles and dolls are all of rubber. They can't kick off the outside cover. And every minute they're cared for and nursed, they're taught to believe in...
safety first.
After the babies, dinner with Clementine. A frugal feast a la vitamine. Celery, cabbage, and carrots, raw. Exercise for teeth and jaw. meat without gravy, quite free of fat. Stewed prunes, some milk, and that is that. Then they switch on the radio to a nice, agreeable musical show. Dramas. Or serials.
Get merry. Tune in next time and find out.
Out of the question. Too blood-curdling to the digestion. The alarm is set and wound at 11. Then bound for a safety governmented heaven. In a pillowless bed, breathing even and deep. In a guaranteed, factual, dreamless sleep. Well, that's Herman's routine for six nights and days. It's certainly worthy of safety praise. And Sundays, the penny whistles all are gay. They go for a drive in Herman's coupe. First, the car is checked for gas and oil and water so the motor will not boil. The tires get air. And also the spare. Glasses to keep out driving glare. Maps, both owner's and driver's card. Hood on tight and bumper and guard. 35 is Herman's high under the open, broad blue sky, but 25 through every town. Brakes are applied when going down. Herman's left hand goes smartly out whenever the car makes a turnabout. At crossings? He crosses cautiously. A safety driver thoroughly. The car purrs along while others pass, and Herman notes every patch of grass until they come to the shadiest tree. There, he stops the car, unjerkily. Clementine and the babies wait while Herman gets out to investigate, reporting the air to be perfectly free of any unpleasant allergy. Mother and twins now step outside while Herman sprays all with insecticide. Sets folding table and chairs all around so no one touches the impure ground. No more has Clementine forgot the salt, safety trained by Herman dear, than an aviator would start to vault without a landing gear. And final precaution, the last bugs are chased by a package from Herman's pocket. Ant paste. A picnic lunch in a country park. What secure abandon. What a careful lark. The eggs are boiled. The ham is sliced. The mustard fresh. The watermelon iced. The can opener is safely in, and extra napkins for each twin, a thermos jug for lemonade, and a sun umbrella to make some shade. Then they journey back, a pleasant drive, at Herman's obedient 35. And so ends a happy safety Sunday, paving the way to a safety Monday. And life in the home of the double latch went cautiously on without a catch. The safety twins outgrew their cribs.
Mama, Daddy.
And sat in high chairs with spongeable bibs. The safety razor kept from nicking. The pop-up toaster went on ticking. The green light never turned to red. The adding machine forged straight ahead. They saved so much. And they spent so much. No driver called Herman a such and such. Clementine's cooking preserved all the juices. Their lamps never blew out any fuses. They carefully chased out all the vermin. When the alarm was ready, so was Herman.
Safety first. Safety second. Safety third.
One evening, after lightly dining, Herman was sitting half reclining, finishing up his evening paper. He turned from the comics to news of labor, and his eye was caught by a small paragraph on the opposite page in the lower half. The trogies were getting very strong. It was alleged, said the paper, it might not be long till another foreign country, so ran the situation, might be laid open to trogy invasion. Now, Herman was glad to read this dispatch, for it proved the theory of the double latch. It just went to show how sunnily bright life could be when you're living right. For if things ever came to the very worst, he was well protected by...
safety first.
Now, a hobby of his that took up no little room was collecting items of possible doom. Scrapbooks and desk drawers all were stacked with newspaper clippings neatly thumbtacked. Sun to shrink in a million years. Man may develop elephant ears. Thunder can strike one out of many. Child coughs up quarter, but swallows penny. So he cut out the clipping about the trogy threat and added it to his scrapbook set. Then took out a medium-sized steel box that was padlocked in front with two secret locks. Shh. Only Herman and Clementine, now tucking in Junior and Hermine, could open these locks with a queer appearance. For the box contained better than gold. Insurance. Fire insurance. Burglary insurance. Car insurance, accident to or by. And all in the box with the private locks. As for the box itself, it was not only gale-proof, but gust-proof, rust-proof, and even bust-proof. Herman unlocked this box and made sure all was exactly as before. And he looked around at the fireproof walls, the watertight cellar, and the non-skid halls, the no-leak roof with a lightning rod and the vitamin twins, fresh peas in a pod. The insurance was secure in its secret place, and a smile of safety wreathed Herman's face. The trogy certainly couldn't be fierce as fire or flood or the jagged pierce of wildest lightning unabated, and to all of these, Herman was insulated. So the trogy clippings grew thick and high. Herman had to go out and buy a giant trunk and then a bin.
Trogies attack again and win.
Battle cries raise terrible din.
When will another country be drawn in?
And so I say to you, the curse of the trogies must be lifted. Unparalleled in history is this ruthless, devastating attack on all the rights.
The new trogy raid, read all about it. Trogy extra, extra.
And Herman clipped and Herman pasted. Not a single evening could now be wasted. For the trogies were proof for all to see the blessings of safety philosophy. Nor were Clementine or the little twins scared, for their safety lives had likewise prepared them to be hemmed in from anxiety, safe in their safety fraternity. And while the presses poured...
extra trogy, extra trogy, trogy!
The radio roared.
Late bulletin. Latest trogy attacks imperils millions. News about this most recent blast of destruction.
And in Herman's office, no one could work. From the great big boss to the least paid clerk. And the typewriter keys were dumb. And the shipping clerks were mum. Except Herman. At his adding machine. For him, life continued contented and serene. And at home, he was even busier, clipping away with blunt-edged scissor. Our hero was cutting out fast, but steady, so by Tomorrow evening, he'd be ready to start out fresh for the newest batch of Trogi Picture and Trogi Dispatch. Clementine, as a good wife's right, was tucking the twins in for the night. Not telling them stories of giants scary, but a crooning tale of the safety fairy. Herman finished with fond affection, clipping his up-to-date collection, and walked to his desk just to make sure that the box with the locks was still secure. There was a little purring sound in the air, like Herman's own 35 miles with care, or even like the well-known tick of the pop-up toaster with the automatic click. The noise grew louder, and Herman thought someone was driving much faster than he ought. He was glad his car was locked in the garage, and that Herman himself had the wise barrage of all his insurance in the big, strong box with the two tricky keys for the secret locks. The box that was gale-proof, gust-proof, rust-proof, dust-proof, and bust-proof. Ladies and gentlemen, in answer to any inquiries, the Trogies, you see, didn't share Herman's theories. And now, just one moment more, if you please, the happy ending. Clementine, now left with Junior and Hermine, knew how to open the big, strong box with her one tricky key for the secret locks. And the papers were there, and strictly in order. Still proof against hail and fire and water. And so she was able, though now bereft, to place all of Herman that was left in a worm-proof casket, tenderly. A flood-proof, mud-proof one, to be safe throughout eternity, thanks to Herman's well-lived word of
safety first, safety second,
and
safety third.
The Columbia Workshop has just brought you the first workshop play by two young New York writers, E. and E. Spitzer. The satire entitled Soundtrack of the Life of a Careful Man. Our narrator was Arnold Moss. Special music for the presentation was composed by Virgil Thompson, music critic of the New York Herald Tribune. The orchestra was conducted by Alexander Semler. Earl McGill directed. Next Sunday at this same time, over most of these stations, the Columbia Workshop will present a melodrama, Double Ugly by George Lloyd, featuring the well-known actress of stage and screen, Miss Isabel Jewell. The musical score is the work of Van Cleve, and Perry Lafferty will direct Double Ugly by George Lloyd. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.